This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show Series 5, Episode 43, From Playing to Coaching. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, with some high profile coaching appointments from ex-international players, we look at the transition from players into coaches and what you can learn for that at your level. We also talk about cricket bats and how important it is to have a good one. And we find out what skidding the ball is. Or do we? Find out with all that and more on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide to coaching and playing better cricket. And we welcome you along for another 30 minutes of cricket coaching and playing chat. My name is David Hinchliffe, and I'm joined, as I am every week, by the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garras.
How are we all?
Anything exciting happening this week with you?
Yeah, plenty. Back at school, yeah. It's good. Good to see everybody again. We've had some really good PB going on this morning on the running track. So 70% of the cricket programme managed to get the mile PB out, which is always very pleasing. It means that the training programme that Alan's put in place for them is working, and they're working hard enough to get the best out of themselves.
And also on the line, it's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers. Lavers with your noisy pen.
Absolutely, yeah. Sorry about that.
I'm sure nobody noticed. We'll just gloss over it. And apart
the pen
from...
will remain still for the rest of the day.
Well, you're free to take some notes as you go along. Just make sure that it's you're as quiet as you can when you press that button.
Will do.
let's move on to more cricket-related topics rather than stationary-related topics. And the thing I wanted to talk about this week was there was a couple of high-profile coaching appointments in the fact that they used to be international cricketers and now they've moved into coaching roles. It's Mark Ramprakash who's taken up the batting role at England, and Paul Collingwood, who's taken up a role with Scotland. So I wanted to talk about that transition and how players go about moving from high-performance international cricket into high-performance coaching, because you don't have a lot of time to sort of earn your spurs as a coach, do you, before you're getting thrust into a very high-end environment. That must be a difficult transition to make.
I think it can be, but for these two, obviously they've got a lot of experience of being in those environments previously, particularly Collie. You know, Collie is somebody who's worked with a number of coaches, whereas Ramp's really only had a couple of England coaches and England regimes over his career. But, you know, Collie's seen a number of environments come and go and picked up all the best bits of it. So his adjustment into international cricket is fine. And also, probably out of the two of them, he's got an opportunity to cut his teeth properly, because he's working with Scotland, and whilst their own expectations are very high in terms of going to the World Cup, which he helped them qualify for, and then going to the World Cup, which comes up very soon, Collie can make a few mistakes. He can do things in that environment that probably Mark Ramprakash won't be able to get away with within the England environment, purely because of the media scrutiny and the supporter scrutiny is going to be far more. And also, you know, Sky Sports will be far more forgiving to Scotland and Collingwood than they will be for Ramprakash and England as it comes into the World Cup and the one-day cricket they've got leading into that.
Yeah, I saw a quite a good article around I don't sure if it's a criticism or not, but the potential criticism, I suppose, of Ramprakash, that he wasn't a particularly successful international batsman, and therefore how can he be a particularly successful international coach? The article was more forgiving than that, and saying, well, you know, those two aren't necessarily related to each other. You don't have to be a great batsman to be a great coach, and a lot of the experiences that Ramprakash had will take him through into his coaching. And of course, he's got the level 4 qualification and all the rest of it. But How do you deal with the philosophy that happens a lot in cricket, Labour, that if someone wasn't a particularly successful player at the level they're coaching, then therefore they can't be a good coach at the level they're coaching?
Yeah, first of all, there are countless examples of people who have achieved coaching accolades way beyond their playing achievements. And obviously, if you drop into the football environment, that's very, very quick to see that a number of the top guys in the world are much more successful in a coaching environment than they are in a playing environment. Similarly, you could say the same about a number of the top people within cricket, and you could start at the top with Peter Moores, really, at the moment, and people like that. The one that really interests me, actually, is that was announced last night, I believe, is Andrew McDonald, who's just taken over as head coach of Leicestershire. Now, he's in a slightly different position where he is the sole head coach and he will be running and responsible for everything, and he's still a player playing for South Australia. So whereas Ramps is going to be one person who is part of a team, I'm not sure on Colley's position. Colley's not going in as head coach, so I think he's a consultant or a coaching consultant or something on those lines. Is that right, Gareth?
Yeah, he'll be assisting Grant Bradburn, who's the head coach of Scotland.
Yeah, sure. So, McDonald's coming in as a head coach, so he will be the leader. It will be his decision that makes or breaks what Leicester should do. I know there's some big changes going on because they've a new chief exec coming in as well. But yeah, that's a real interesting point. There's someone coming in straight into a head coaching position as opposed to coming into to be a member of a team. Now, obviously, as Gareth mentioned there, there's a lot of experience that can be gained throughout your playing career as well. So Collingwood and Ramps have obviously got a lot of that. And McDonald, to be fair, has got quite a lot of that as well. And he's played a lot of cricket around the world in different formats and different environments. So it'll be interesting to see how he manages to apply his trade in England with Leicester, where he's been before. But I don't think we see any reason why people can't achieve above their playing potential as a coach. I think often the case is that the longer they're in the game, the more they learn. People learn at different rates, and sometimes people by the time they get around to their coaching have learned so much that they're actually a lot more valuable than they were as a player.
Yeah, it can be very reductive to just say, well, what does he know about it? He only averaged 27 or whatever that argument is. And I think the quicker we can move beyond those kind of arguments, the better when it comes to coaching, because coaching is about a lot more than what your batting average was or your bowling average was.
It's great that you can talk from experience, and I think that's fantastic. But even since Rance has retired, and it's not been too many years since that's happened, the game has moved on a little bit. And even now, you know, I not that I've got anything to talk about as a player, but if I was to ever start talking about my own experiences in playing, there would be only one or two situations where that would have any gravitas within the game that we play nowadays. You know, I could play spin pretty well, and I had a good game plan against spin. So I can use that, and regularly I do use that. But apart from that, I don't really ever offer what I did as a player, because it's not relevant to the kids that we work with or the players that we work with, and it's certainly not relevant to the formats and the way that people play those formats. You know, Colley now is playing county cricket, but it's been interesting to watch his lack of performance, really, in the last couple of years since he's played international cricket. He's done a great job as a leader in winning a championship and doing a great job in the one-day stuff last year to bring home a trophy as well. But in between that, there hasn't been much individual performance in there because the game is moving on, and really it's his experience to others which is more valuable, as you said earlier. And I think it's a dangerous one to start talking about what you used to do, and the sooner you could turn into a coach that can talk to people about what other players have done and what they're doing really well, then that transition from player to coach is made very much more quickly.
Yeah, the last thing you want to do is say, back in my day, that's not going to help many
people.
That's
the commentators, isn't it? Commentators. Not
yes, exactly. Okay, let's move on to the yes-no round. It's going to be three questions, and this week there's a little bit of a theme, and the theme is relative importance of things. And those three questions can only be answered yes or no to, no matter how much more that we want to say about the particular topic. So here comes the first question. First question is, improvement is more important than change.
Yes.
Second question, peace is more important than strength.
No.
No.
Third question, bowling is more important than batting.
No.
Yes.
Ranking things is not as important as just getting on with it. Now, it's this portion of the show where we delve into the mailbag and we pick out a couple of questions which have been sent in by listeners to this show and readers to both the Pitch Vision Academy website and the Pitch Vision Academy Facebook page, all of which are ways of getting in touch with us. And we decide on the best question of the week after we've answered those questions and given them a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can send your questions in to us by emailing coach@pitchvision.com or using one of the other methods that we'll tell you about at the end of the show. First question is from John. And John says, I bought a new bat early last season. However, frustratingly, I find the middle on the bat higher than in my previous ones. And I often struggle to middle the ball, lacking power in my shots. What can I do to adapt to this and connect properly with my shots?
Don't adapt, go and buy a new bat.
Simple as that.
Yeah, I completely agree with Gareth there. If possible, I think we should be thinking largely about ourselves and our own development and what we do as cricketers. I think bats do come and go, and yes, the bat might not be ideal at the moment, but I wouldn't go looking to change the way I play or my technique or the way I approach batting just because of the bat that I've got, which effectively is for a temporary period of time. Whereas a technique that you're developing and you've developed so far, obviously over a number of years, is something that is a keeper for a long period, really. So I'd very much be hesitant to change the way I play. I'd be focusing more on maintaining my technique and just looking at the bat option and seeing if there is another bat I can get, whether or not you can afford to buy another one, or you can swap a bat with someone. Or if you have to bite the bullet, maybe you can sell it on and make some of the money back and then go and get another one yourself. But I'd, if possible, if you really feel that the bat is the issue, I wouldn't be looking at changing my own technique.
And I guess that's my follow-up question is, how important is that middle position? Is it more of a psychological thing in that if you feel like it, you're middling it less because you feel like the middle's in the wrong place, then that's going to give you less confidence, you're not going to bat as well? Or is it actually a genuine thing where there are some people who bat and they need the position of the middle to be lower and some people are bat and they need the position of the middle to be higher?
Well, I think it's a bit of placebo in there, isn't it? And we'll all, as batters or people that have gone out there with bat, we'll feel sometimes that the bat in our hand is going to make an element difference, you know, whether that be in confidence, whether that be in making sure that if we do make an error and we chip one up in the air, then it goes far enough to get us out of trouble. That was always something that Desmond Haynes said to me. It was one of his first bits of coaching advice, actually, was to make sure that you got a bat in your hand, that if you get it slightly wrong, then it goes over somebody's head. You know, it's pretty basic coaching, but... you know, I can understand where he's coming from on that one. To me, it's more about if you do want to adapt anything and you haven't, let's say hypothetically that you can't get another bat because finance is against you and you've got to go with the bat that you've been given, then rather than adapting your technique, maybe look at it as an opportunity to develop a shot that would work with that bat. So an example of somebody who's finding that the bat middle is a bit too high, it might be an opportunity to develop a pull shot or a cut shot. So rather than looking at it as just a get yourself a new bat, oh, I can't, well, in that case, my season's over, it could be an opportunity to get somebody to start that process of drilling in some pull shots and seeing if you can build up to being able to play it in a game where the natural height of the ball will allow the natural height of the middle of the bat to meet. There is a more positive way of looking at it. I think that first and foremost, if you've got the opportunity to change the bat to make it work for you, that would be great. And a good way of doing that is to go into a shop and actually knock up with the bats and get a feel for where the middle is, that it sits within your game. But if you can't do that, then look at it as an opportunity to develop your game rather than adapting your style. Just maybe introduce a shot that might work with a slightly higher middle and see if you can work on that and bring that into your game.
And it's not like if you've got a high middle, you know, you can never play a front foot drive ever again, is it, Lavis?
Oh, absolutely not. There's still every opportunity to play every shot. It might be that the way you played it in the past doesn't mirror the way you're going to play it in the future all the time. And a bat might be less powerful, for instance, if the middle's positioned differently. But at the same time, there may be other added benefits to having this bat. You might find that with a slightly higher middle, as Gareth said, you could learn a back foot shot. You might actually find the back foot shots are slightly easier. You might find manoeuvring the bat a bit easier. You might find that some of the shots that aren't a regular part of your game just become slightly easier because of the manoeuvrability of the bat, and the speed of your hands and bat through the ball improves. So, while you may not be playing exactly the same way, there's definitely opportunities to improve or to take a positive from the position you're in.
I think my opinion about cricket bats has changed a bit over the years. There was, to me, a bit of a mythical thing that, you know, so they magically, you know, you get good ones and you get not so good ones, and there's some kind of magic in them. But I think as I get older, I realise that the magic is in the batsman and not necessarily in the bat. And as long as you've got a halfway decent bat, it doesn't really matter about what the size of the edges or how much of a bow there is or what the position of the middle is or what the name of the maker is on the back. I mean, there is an element of that, but I think more important is your ability to bat. And as long as you've got something which is halfway decent, then you're going to get plenty of runs if you've got confidence in it.
Absolutely. I think you can look across sports and you can compare various sports with cricket, and the ratio between the equipment and the person using the equipment is very different across sports. And you can look at horse racing or motor racing and then look at cricket or tennis. And they're all probably slightly different ratios. And even I think F1 drivers would admit that their reliance on the car is probably quite a big proportion to the success of their race. Whereas within tennis, it might be slightly different. The racket might provide 5 or 10% of the input to the outcome of the results. So cricket probably more that end, I would have said, than maybe a racing sport like motor racing or horse racing possibly.
Okay, the next question is from Shiv, and Shiv's got a brief question. Shiv says, "What is skidding the ball?" And I'm interested in this because we talk technical quite a lot on this show, and I think maybe from time to time, it might be worth talking about these terms in broader ways and seeing how it applies to improving someone's game. So what is skidding the ball?
It's a great question because I'm asking myself the same question. What is skidding the ball? I've been looking at this one for about an hour or so and thinking, right, what is it? And the only way that I think I would ever use it is when you're talking about throwing and maybe using the square to bounce the ball into, to get the ball to the keeper or to the defenderman to affect a run out. But even then, I'd probably use the word skimming rather than skidding. So yeah, it's a question that I can't give you a definitive on. If I have used it on this show, then somebody please tell me, because I'm not sure I know what I'm using it for.
Well, in my mind, it was to do with the difference between a skiddy bowler and, say, a bowler who bowls a heavy ball. The idea that there's a type of bowler who skids the ball off the surface rather than making the ball bounce high off the surface. That was the way that I read it.
Right, okay.
Do you ever define bowlers in that way?
Yes, because we've all played against bowlers that seem to appear to spend a lot less time on the pitch and the hurriness, and that often comes through trajectory, doesn't it? It's the trajectory of the ball coming in at a lower trajectory and sort of appearing to skid off the surface and come onto us quickly. And then obviously you've got the guys that come all the way over the top that make the most of their height and will get the ball to bounce. And the heavy ball thing is when the ball's bouncing up and hitting the top half of the bat, isn't it? The splice region, particularly when you're playing forward. So I always think of people like Joel Garner would be somebody that everybody used to say bowled a heavy ball as opposed to a skiddy ball, whereas Malcolm Marshall at the other end would probably bowl a skiddy one. But that was more to do with trajectory and release points than it was them actually trying to skid the ball. It's a result of what they've got in their physique and the way that they bowl.
So I guess, Lavers, what we're saying is there's not really much you can do about it. You're either a skiddy bowler, in inverted commas, or you're not. But is there anything you can do to enhance what you have if you are that type of a bowler, or even if you're not that type of a bowler?
Potentially there is. If I just go back to when I read the question, I kind of was... Obviously, it's quite a brief question, so yeah. It requires a degree of interpretation. And initially I was thinking of three different factors. One of them being the one that Gareth alluded to with, which was skidding a ball, or skimming a ball as Gareth would word it, from the field back to the wicketkeeper or the bowler. The other one is as a fast bowler, where you can have different trajectories into the pitch. So you can obviously have a heavy ball, as we mentioned there, or a ball with a slightly flatter trajectory can be deemed to be skiddy. The final area, which was the one I was considering really, was as a spinner. And as a spinner, you can obviously bowl a top spinner or a leg spinner or an off spinner, but also an increasingly big part of the game is the ball that's rotating backwards while still turning either from off to leg or left to off. But in Shane Warne's case, was obviously a slider. And that's a ball that not only doesn't deviate sideways because it's skidding and it's not getting the same purchase with the surface of the pitch and it's not turning away from the batter, but also seems to accelerate as it lands on the pitch and moves on towards the batsman because of the flatter trajectory it takes off the pitch as well. So that was the area I was considering when we were discussing, well, when the idea of skidding a ball came up. But again, as with any question along this manner, it's the interpretation of the question. So I think it could be that fast bowling option where maybe it's a slightly lower action could create more of a skidding outcome with the ball. But for me, I was thinking more on the spin lines.
Yeah, the spin one is an interesting one, isn't it? Because that's the one where you've got the most control. It's a variation of a spinner, isn't it? Rather than a style of bowling, which you don't have a huge amount of control over. If you've got a low arm, then that's that. But there's things you can do to make the ball more skiddy if you want to bowl that kind of a variation as a spinner. So I guess that's more interesting as a player and as a coach.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're not limited and you don't have a fixed point of release as a quick bowler, but you're generally going to bowl the way you bowl the majority of the time in terms of release point. And you can make small adaptations to that, but you're not going to make sweeping changes that are going to suddenly take you from a heavy ball to a skinny ball. But as a spinner, being able to release a ball that's spinning forwards and sideways, which lands and grips the surface and then turns, and then being able to release another ball which spins backwards and sideways ultimately, and instead of gripping and turning, because of the direction of the spin being in contrast to the direction of the travelling of the ball, You'll often find that grip won't take place and that will skid as opposed to grip, and that will then go straight on. This is obviously something that spinners can work on themselves, but it's obviously quite dependent on conditions. So that the softer the conditions or the more warm the conditions, the less likely you are to actually get that skiddy
ball go on, because you'll get a little bit of purchase on a rough wicket or a very soft wet wicket sometimes, where you can get through the top of the surface. But often on a flatter or a newer pitch, you can find that that can be a really big weapon as a spin bowler, if you can show a little bit of turn, and then you can maintain that side spin on the ball but get the ball to continue straight on.
And then traditionally, a skinny bowler, when we're talking about faster bowlers, traditionally I suppose you'd be encouraging a bowler like that to pitch the ball up, try and get it to swing, try and encourage that skinniness onto the bat a little bit more than, say, a bowler who gets a bit more bounce, who would be looking more to bowl slightly back of a length. Is that a good general rule to play with, Gareth?
Well, as a general rule, I'd say that you want the skiddier bowler to bring the stumps into play, don't you, on a more regular basis. Not to say that you don't want your taller bowler that gets the ball to bounce to bring the stumps into play, because often their downfall is that they get the ball to go through to the keeper and it looks very pretty. Lots of plays and misses, but not a lot of reward for it. Whereas if you look at somebody like a Waqar Yunus, for example, who could be described as a skiddy bowler, he brought the stumps into play a lot. And if you missed, he hit either your foot or your stump. So, yeah, if you are a skiddy bowler, then you want a higher percentage of balls, I'd suggest, to hit the stumps than not.
Good. OK, well, hopefully, Shiv, we've found an answer for you in there somewhere. But as always, if you've got any follow-up, in fact, if anyone's got any follow-up, then please do get in touch with us and talk to us a little bit more about perhaps your interpretation of what skidding the ball really is, and especially if you're Shiv and you're listening to this, but anyone can join in the conversation. And now on the show, we have the soapbox section, 60 seconds. Sam Lavery, he can talk about anything that he likes. Over to you, Lavers.
Okay, well, my topic for today was just patience, really. And that's patience for players, patience for coaches, and probably patience for supporters and parents as well sometimes. It's a time of year where we're a long way away from what we're actually going to be doing, so the performances are quite a long way away. And it's probably time where we're actually looking at long-term plans and not expecting immediate gains. So from a player's perspective, think about what you'd like to achieve over the next 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 2 to 3 months. From a coach's perspective, don't try and rush people. Be aware that you've got time at this time of year. You've got the ability to wait and let people make mistakes. People don't have to get things right the first time. And from a supporter's perspective, or a parent's perspective, again, if you can, do your job. Don't expect immediate results if you're watching people in nets. Give it time. There's lots of that we've got at this moment in the year, and changes will happen.
And that is the end of the show for this week. We have had a lot of fun putting it together, but now we have to go off and do other things, unfortunately. But before we go, we're just going to decide on the winner of this week's prize, which is the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So, Gareth, which was the best question for you this week?
I'm going to go with John this week, because I gave a very flippant response first and foremost, but with the opportunity to elaborate a little bit more on it. And it's probably a problem that people are going to be facing all over the world. So it was definitely a good question to pose.
Sometimes the short and simple answer is the answer. Let's not forget that. We do like to talk, but sometimes you don't have to. So, Lavers, if someone was thinking to themselves that they wanted to win the prize, wanted to get their question answered on the show, how could they get in touch with us?
Well, it's quite easy, actually. We've got a couple of ways. They can call us on 0203 239 7543, or they could drop an email to us at coach@pitchvision.com.
That's correct. Another very common way of sending in questions is going to our Facebook page, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, and there are ways to post questions there to us. If you want to use Twitter instead, you can find us at pitchvisionacad. Always happy to have a 140 character chat in there. And if you want to listen to this show every week and get those questions answered and find out some coaching and playing advice, then you can do so by subscribing to the show in any podcast catching program. iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Windows Phone Podcast, Dogcatcher, Overcast. You can find us in there. Just do a little search for us and you'll see our faces smiling back to you. And if you want to use the old-fashioned way, the RSS feed, you can do that as well by going to pitchvision.com/academy and clicking on the podcast link at the top. And there's the RSS feed details in there. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Lavis. Cheers, Garris.
Cheers, guys.